This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And this is the way it works, folks. Terrorism 2.0.
When I walked into the departure area, the bomb goes off. It was like pure panic, which was breaking out. You saw people running out, shouting. And soon after that, I think it's within 1 or 2 minutes, you have the second explosion. I said, this is insane. I said, this is insane. This is, well, this is like a war zone.
Dual explosions, the first believed hidden in luggage, causing panic. The second, a suicide bomber exploiting the panic to maximize casualties. A method and a clue into the ISIS-claimed attack at Brussels airport this week. Witness Jeff Verselli speaking there has one piece of the puzzle authorities are trying to assemble a day after terrorists brought Belgium to a standstill. As authorities concentrated efforts on the airport, another bomb went off at the Malbec train station, killing 20. The resources deployed at the airport ensured the first responders would have the most difficult possible time making the 7-mile journey to this second scene of carnage. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack, and the timing tempted linking the attack as retaliation for arrests of targets in the ISIS cell in the Brussels neighborhood of Molenbeek, believed responsible for the Paris attacks last year. It's, quote, still too early to make a direct connection between the attacks in Paris and today's attacks, say authorities, though. Still, Friday's arrest of Salah Abdeslam, a major player in the Paris attacks, and the discovery of weapons and detonators from a police raid last week suggesting Abdeslam intended to participate in yesterday's attacks or that the attack was ordered to stay ahead of police who seemed to be closing in. All those possible theories. Belgian Prime Minister Charles Michel spoke to his nation in a voice of resignation that Belgium's luck had finally run out.
Mesdames et messieurs, ce que nous redoutions s'est réalisé.
Ladies and gentlemen, what we feared has happened. Our country and citizens have been hit by a terrorist attack in a violent and cowardly way.
Aveugle, violent et lâche.
What is it about Belgium, central to the European Union, but apparently the soft underbelly of the European continent, security-wise? Ian Lesser is Senior Director for Foreign and Security Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's speaking to us from Brussels. Ian, why is Belgium such a scene of vulnerability, even though it's the capital of European governance?
Belgium and Brussels in particular has for some time had a severe problem with radicalized networks. It's not so much that the Belgian authorities have been ill-equipped to handle the problem. It's just a very, very tough problem that has also challenged law enforcement and intelligence agencies elsewhere in Europe.
But if there was cooperation and more of a sense of a continental security apparatus, it just seems that that would be a much better approach to dealing with this and would much more easily foil these terrorists from exploiting individual weaknesses in the system.
The problem, of course, is that many in Europe, especially on the populist right, xenophobic movements and so on, are looking at this as an example exactly of what you say. They see this as an argument for a closing down of Europe, for even an end to the European project, a renationalization of policies, a closing rather than an opening. My own view would be that Europe needs precisely the opposite. It needs more Europe. It needs more coordination. It needs more sharing of intelligence and so on. But there are many pressures on that project in Europe at the moment.
You know, as we've seen in the migrant crisis, Europe is vulnerable and sort of mushy on the external fringe. People land in Greece and then try to make passage inside. And then this becomes an argument for shutting down the Schengen Agreement and all of the motion that's possible within countries. Maybe the argument is to really wall up, not to be Donald Trump in this situation, but to be much more secure on the external borders of Europe and enable more movement within. But that would require a much greater degree of cooperation on security in dealing with the border of the EU as opposed to individual borders between countries. Nationalism, it seems to me, complicates this and makes Europe insecure, not more secure.
There are plenty of communities already here with radicalized individuals, people who have perhaps traveled to Iraq or Syria and are coming back. It might help at the margins. It will solve other public policy problems, perhaps. But in terms of terrorism and counterterrorism, it's not the core of the issue.
How are you feeling today, Ian?
Brussels, you know, I won't say it's getting back to normal because obviously people were traumatized by this, but I think in contrast to the situation after the Paris attacks, when Brussels was essentially shut down for almost a week on a similar level of alert, I think the authorities now are consciously trying not to have that happen. They want the economic and social life of the city to continue, and it seems to me that that is exactly what's happening. A lot of the transport is open, buildings are open, and so on. So despite the risk and the trauma, the city is in some sense getting back to normal.
Ian Lesser is Senior Director for Foreign and Security Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He spoke to us from Brussels. Thank you so much, Ian.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
And let's continue this discussion with Constanze Stelzenmüller, who's a Robert Bosch Senior Fellow with the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution. She joins me now right here in New York City in our studios. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to talk to you again. We always talk in the most difficult circumstances, it seems. Is Europe and Germany, to just single out one country, only as secure as its least secure neighbor in the European Union?
No, I think that that's an exaggeration. It's true, of course, that Europe has porous borders. And my own country, Germany, has borders, land borders, with 10 countries. And of course, because of the Schengen Agreement, we have been used to living without borders for a long time and considered that not just as something that was immensely useful and was good for the economy, but also as something of a civilizational achievement. So people are looking at this with these developments with a great deal of regret because they sense that this may be, this may be doomed. Look, the fact of the matter is, unlike America, which has, you know, two oceans on either side, and the Canadians, whom obviously you don't trust, and the Mexicans, whom you trust even less, but you're building a wall there on the other sides, America is a slightly easier to defend, and even America had the 9/11 attacks, right? Europe can only protect itself if it becomes A, resilient, and B, integrates its Muslim population. Those two are tall orders, and we haven't done enough there yet. Pulling up drawbridges, building walls, just isn't an option for us.
Although this attack will embolden the Le Pens, it will embolden the Frauke Petris.
You mean the right-wing populists in Europe?
Exactly.
No doubt it will, but these people are emboldened by anything and nothing, as we can see, and as we can see from a certain presidential candidate here as well.
Right, who went from a joke to practically having the nomination.
I think reality to them is a secondary concern. But yes, people are afraid. People are afraid of losing control, are afraid of losing security. And if they see their governments unable or unwilling to provide for a security, they're going to complain and they're going to be vulnerable to this kind of populist rat catcher. The truth is also that Belgium, where these attacks happened, is peculiarly vulnerable as a society and as a polity. As a society, because it does have a very large and quite alienated, self-ghettoized Muslim population with, I think, almost next to no governmental effort and inclusion. And it is also something of a fraught and fragmented state with a badly performing government. So Belgium, I think, is in some ways uniquely vulnerable. That's a concern for other Europeans, but it doesn't necessarily, and it's a concern in the sense that, you know, there are neighbors, and lots of other Europeans live in Belgium. I have lots of friends there. That's a concern.
Of course you do. Just two things. One, did you just call Frauke Petri a populist rat catcher?
Yes, I did.
Extraordinary. That's some rhetoric.
Well, I think it's a fairly appropriate. If I had the German language original in front of me, some of the things she's been saying, and her ilk have been saying, I mean, some of that is quite close to neo-Nazi language, and I think populist rat catcher is exactly the right word for that.
Let's talk about the vision of Europe. There's been a reactive sense to the EU can't handle some of the financial challenges that have been going on over the last 2 years. And we're looking now that the EU is being challenged on the security front. Is it time to rethink the question of what the – I mean, yes, you don't have two oceans between you, but is it better to deploy security on the external borders of Europe and find a way of being more cooperative on security within the borders of greater Europe as a way of making it an easy place to move around in and being secure?
I understand the question. There are a couple of levels of this to this. It's not quite as simple as saying, you know, if all the Europeans just got were better organized, then this would be much easier to do. If it were a perfect world, obviously, we would have coordinated or even common European forces, police, and intelligence. That is an incredibly difficult thing to do because we are a union of 28 sovereign nation states who at the same time, for I think many of us, probably even my own country, Germany, which supposedly is the most powerful and largest one certainly these days, find that sovereignty under conditions of open borders and globalization is a fairly notional thing. The reality is that there are two levels that we need to pay attention to here. I think a state that isn't a nation state that isn't providing essential government functions such as safety and security, and that's what's happening in Belgium, is a problem unto itself. It doesn't need Europe for that, and it's not going to be helped if Europe does that for it. If Belgian police and intelligence were as good as they should be, we wouldn't be talking about the European part of this. The reality, of course, is that terrorists cross borders, and therefore we need cooperation across borders. Okay, but even if we had that kind of cooperation, or even if those police and intelligence forces were unified and Europeanized, we'd still have a problem with Belgian national police and security. Okay, so I think you have to tackle this problem at two levels. You have to improve nation state capabilities, and I don't want to blame the poor Belgians for this, or put all the burden of this on the poor Belgians. There are other countries in Europe, a lot of other countries, who have similar problems.
Constanze Stelzenmüller is Robert Bosch, senior fellow with the Center on United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.